Blog Talk Radio.
How come it's not lighting up? Oh, shit. This is gonna be a fucking mess today.
My eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trampling out the vintage where the great of wrath are stored. He has loosed the fateful lightning of his death.
Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and thank you once again for taking time out of your busy life to join me on the broadcast today. We are halfway through the summer season. Temperatures have been soaring really hot here in Florissant, Missouri, and really looking forward to the fall for one main reason, the publication of my new book. I'm about halfway finished with the new publication as far as typing and preparation goes. The name of the book is Broken Yet Beautiful, and it features my dear Iranian friend Manoush in Sweden. She is helping me write this, and I'm in that section of the book right now where I'm transcribing what she has written about women in Islam. And that's where I'm at as far as typing the manuscript. It has been a great journey so far. I'm very excited about how this book is going to relate to so many different people. First of all, to women in the church who struggle with the gender hierarchy, the male discrimination, if you will. And this book is about women teaching, having leadership roles in pastoring churches, and giving the biblical evidence and support for this calling. This has been a source of great controversy for so long, where women are given a second-class status in the church, and it's been told to them that the Bible forbids a woman to teach other men. And so that whole issue is in the new book. Other than that issue, I'm also talking about the suffering women in Iran rising up from their ashes and standing against an oppressive government. And I'll be talking about that in section two of the book, about Saudi Arabia, about the women of Revolution Street. Manoush is writing about Golrokh. She is still in prison with her husband Arash. So this book has a lot of facets to it. It's an encouragement to women. It's biblical support for what they choose and want to do in the church. It's breaking down the male hierarchy patriarchal mindset in the church, because the Bible teaches the equality of the sexes, obviously, and equal as image bearers of God. So this should not be an issue. There's so much baggage, so much false teaching in this area against women, and it's time now for voices to raise up in their defense, and that's why I'm writing this book. I'll be sharing a little bit of the book later on. Some very, very sad news as we begin the broadcast today. Miriam Farage, she's a 33-year-old human rights activist, a dissident. She was one of the women protesters back in December that joined the Women of Revolution Street, putting their hijab on a stick and standing up in protest of the compulsory hijab law. She was arrested. And in April, she was brought before the court and was told, basically, you are going to spend the next 3 years in prison for protesting against compulsory hijab, and you're going to be banned from traveling outside of Iran for 2 years. Well, Miriam, of course, didn't take that very well, and as she left the court, she returned to her father. And unfortunately, just after she posted bail, body was found. She had been burned to death. It was found on July 5th. And yes, there was lots of tests, but the body was confirmed to be that of Miriam. Very, very sad. These are the tactics of this murderous cult regime. Back in December, 3,700 students were arrested. There was over 25 deaths. Her trial was initially held on April 8th, and this is the result of what happens when women take to the streets in Iran and stand up for their human rights, for the right to have freedom, for the right to have a choice whether or not to wear the hijab. And based on past experiences, we know, as human rights activists, that the regime is somehow behind the murder of this beautiful human rights activist, Miriam Farage. And today I want to dedicate the program to her and her family and to let them know that this program, that we as human rights activists will continue to be her voice and be the voice for all women who suffer under this dictatorship regime in Iran. Last week also, a young girl named Mayba Habjari, only 17 or 19 years old, we're not sure about her age, she was arrested for posting a video on Instagram of her dancing. Now, of course, in the Islamic Republican, the Islamic Republic of Iran, everything is forbidden. Happiness is a crime in Iran. And, of course, the dance is forbidden because that is somehow tempting to men. And that's why women have to wear the veil. That's why women and men have to be segregated. They can't dance together. There is no enjoyment, no happiness under the cult of this dictatorship. So I decided what I'm going to do as a result of dancing being forbidden in Iran is to feature some sound clips from a movie made about dancing in Iran. And it's a fantastic movie. If you haven't seen it, I recommend that you see Desert Dancer. It's the story of Afshin Ghaffarian, who wanted to dance in Iran, but was being told that it's against Islamic law. And instead of bowing and buckling under the pressure, Afshin decided to protest and use dancing as a weapon. Now, this movie came out about 3 years ago, but it chronicles Afshin's life and taking a stand against the forbidden law of dancing in Iran. I want you to hear this first sound clip. It's about the behind the scenes of how they choreographed the dancing in this movie. It's called Making the Dance, from the movie Desert Dancer.
In Iran, it's in most cases illegal to dance. Desert Dancer is the true story of Afshin Ghaffarian, a young man who used dance as a narrative device and as a weapon to fight for freedom. I needed the dancing to be truly unique cinematically.
With Richard, I think the very first thing I said to him was, if I'm going to play this character, I want to be training for a good 6 to 7 months before we start filming.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
For us, none of us being dancers, it was tough.
We were so overjoyed to work with Akram Khan, one of the world's best choreographers. He had this incredible ethereal and spiritual quality to his dance, which I resonated to very strongly.
For me, the only way to experience being a dancer is by being a dancer and living a dancer's life, in a sense. So the intensity that they worked in was incredible.
It's the most challenging thing I've ever done. I really have a newfound, unlimited respect for dancers.
Because we're surrounded by mirrors when we're in a studio, you're tempted to look at yourself and go, oh my God, I look so bad right now, I look so awkward. Just to get out of that self-judgment mode was definitely the prime experience of my entire dance practice.
Akram strives for absolute perfection, which, when you're in it, is intensely frustrating because you just want to break, you know. But when he pushes you and pushes you and pushes you, we achieve things that we never believed was possible.
Dance can be anything, waving goodbye or raising your fist in the air.
It was always about discovery in the room. There was no script for the dance, and it was pure creativity.
Well, I put my trust in Akram, so I thought, I'm going to leave the character, I'm just going to move when he tells me to move and explore. And gradually, after like a few weeks or a couple of months, you start to feel, hang on a minute, my body's changed, my posture's changed. Suddenly, this character starts to emerge through movement.
He ends up with immersive, narrative, three-dimensional dance. And it takes you to a very uplifting and inspired emotional place. It's beautiful.
My name is Afshin Ghaffarian. I'm a citizen of Iran. I'm a dancer.
This movie, if you haven't seen it, it's well worth the time spent because you will get an education of Afshin Ghaffarian's life and how he stood up and used dancing as a weapon to protest against this government. I want you to hear from him a little bit as he's interviewed about this film. This is another soundbite from behind the scenes of Desert Dancer.
My name is Afshin Ghaffarian. I'm a citizen of Iran. And I'm a dancer.
It was in my mind that why there is no dance in Iran? And why dance is... dance is forbidden. I cannot dance. Why?
I read the story about this Iranian dancer called Afshin and how he had put on a performance in the desert, been arrested because he was a dancer. And I was fascinated by this story because I had no idea that it was illegal to dance in Iran.
I want to start a dance group.
You get caught dancing, you go to prison.
I want us to take control of our lives.
We were all protesting the condition in Iran. We want changes. We want to do something.
The regime, you know, they're strangling us. We can go out to the desert. We can feel what it's like to breathe.
For me, it was clear that this is the thing that I want to do. Then,
Afshin used dance as a communication to show people what he had gone through. He had a saying that dance is his weapon, and I love the idea of dance being a weapon to fight for freedom.
Dance can be anything. Waving goodbye or raising your fist in the air, but you only make a difference when you find your own secret language.
He fundamentally does not like the fact that his voice is silenced before he has a chance to find out what it is.
It's based in Iran, but this could happen anywhere in the world. Do we really live in a world where every single human being is allowed to express themselves to their full potential?
The film is built around this belief that no matter who you are, what religion, race, or creed, we all have the same right to fulfill and to live our dreams. And Afshin's story is very symbolic of that belief and of that hope and of that fight.
You know, when I dance, I feel free. Like no one can take it away.
Desert Dancer is a magnificent movie. The dancing choreography, the different styles of dancing, The way they put this together will inspire you. It will bring you to tears as these dedicated Iranians stand up against this dictatorship government and defy their rule against dancing. My good friend Manoush has written a short piece on this topic this morning that I want to read to you on the subject of dancing. Dancing is an art, just like music, acting, painting, similar to an actor who presents his art in a film, or a singer who does the same by music, or a painter who shows his art in his paintings. A dancer should also be able to perform his art through his and her dance. Is there anyone who does not enjoy watching a dancer perform? The art of dancing is appreciated in every advanced society, and just like other types of art and sport, one may also find solo and group dance performances. But in a dictatorship Islamic regime, a 17-year-old girl's dance is regarded as propagating prostitution. Apparently, music and dance and every other type of art are supposed to be prohibited by this regime. Women's voice in music is tempting to men and must also be forbidden. Also, when it comes to dancing, it is considered to provoke prostitution and corruption. Maida, the dancer who has simply performed her art just like any other artist in this and in this corrupt regime, made people like me clench our teeth again and stare at this dictatorship with reddened eyes filled with hatred. Interestingly enough, although this regime's hirelings freely perform the dance of rape, embezzlement, slaughter, and suppression in the society, they spent a long time tracking Maida and then arrest her for propagating prostitution. Yes, in the Islamic regime of Iran, true free art is a crime. Dancing is punished by whipping and imprisonment. In fact, this regime is famous for suppressing young people's happiness. Moreover, a few years ago, some young boys and girls who were singing Pharrell Williams' Happy on the rooftops were arrested in a suppressing mission. Contemptuously, they were made to sit before the camera to scare other young people away and prevent them from potential happy gatherings. However, such repressive treatments have not only stopped young people from dancing or happy gatherings, but have caused the regime to drown more into the current swamp and be more accursed. The way this inferior regime treats people is unacceptable. That is Manoush giving her viewpoint on the subject of dancing. We've been talking this morning about dancing, and I want to read to you this just really powerful article from the Broadly magazine. It's Beulah Devani from January 11th, 2016, and she is talking about the illegal underground ballerinas of Iran. And so I thought what would be very helpful is to get an inside look at how those who have mastered the art of dance have decided they will meet secretly underground and find their way here and there to do public performances and stand up against this government. So I want to take you behind the scenes in this article. I want you to listen very carefully. The writer is talking about meeting one of these underground ballerinas. The first time I met Ada was at a rooftop party in Amsterdam. We had gravitated towards the snack table, and reluctant to give up a prime position that offered both uninterrupted access to the fries and a view of drunk tourists falling into the Prishkant Canal, we began swapping stories. Ada, a web developer from Iran, told me about dodging Tehran's morality police as a teenager, once dashing into a shop in hope that they'd run past her, only to realize that they had followed her into the shop. Really sad. Now, this is really interesting. I want to take you behind the scenes now. 6 months after this conversation, Ada emailed me from Tehran. She had just attended her first ballet class in years and was buzzing. She told me about covertly scanning the local newspapers for the right kind of advertising. Stalking dance is illegal in Iran. Before the 1979 revolution, the country poured funding into the arts, especially dance programs that combined elements of traditional dance with Western disciplines like ballet. After the Shah's government was overthrown, dance was declared sinful. The Iranian National Ballet Company was disbanded in 1979, shortly after all its foreign dancers fled the country. Their Iranian counterparts were left with three choices: give up on their life's work and find another way to pay their rent, leave Iran and revive the company somewhere else, or stay in Iran and, through a combination of subterfuge, bribery, and outright defiance, keep dancing. Ada was 20 when she first attended her first ballet class. She is now 28. Quote, "I'm not a risk taker, and I never went to any of the illegal parties at college," she says, "but dance classes seemed worth the risk." It's not just dance that is banned in Iran. Any music that makes your body move spontaneously is considered sinful. "It's okay as long as it doesn't give you pleasure," Ada explains. "As soon as dance or movement gives you pleasure, it's a sin." Coming from an English town that was obsessed with three-year-olds in pink tooties wobbling to Swan Lake, it's difficult to picture ballet as a risky or illicit activity. "While I was whining to my mom that I wanted red, not pink, ballet shoes, Ada had to keep her dance classes a secret from her parents. Her parents would have banned Ada from attending. Police regularly broke up the classes, especially if the teachers hadn't paid a big enough bribe, and Ada's arrest could have led to a prison sentence and expulsion from university." Isn't it sad as you hear this young girl's story? "I make dance shoes. They cannot forbid making shoes." Ada's old dance teacher, Azar, reflects on the constant threat of police intervention. "At any time, there is a chance that police will arrive and arrest all of us," she says. "I keep telling my students that I can't guarantee their safety. However, I try to be very careful. I only accept students who have been referred by other students. I do not try to fill in all my hours by advertising like some other teachers who give out business cards on the street." Advertising the classes is a delicate balancing act. Too little promotion leads to empty classes, while too much can attract the wrong kind of attention. A trainee teacher, Yasi, remembers the delicate balancing act performed by their dance mentor. "She was very cautious, but several times she received calls from government people, even from the offices under the direct control of the supreme leader, inviting her to perform Iranian folklore dancers either abroad at some specific international event or in the embassies of other countries in Iran," she says. "They offered good compensation, but she did not accept." Yasi's mentor eventually left Iran to teach abroad, and Yasi took over her classes, making sure not to accept any juicy invitations from the regime to dance in public. While the 1979 revolution ended many dancers' careers, it did create unusual opportunities for people like Nazrin, a young dancer who almost buy multiple places and take their pick from cheap and cheerful basics to high-quality ballet shoes. 35 years on, Tehran's shoemakers have largely moved on, died off, or given up. Nazrin advertises her work via Instagram and is fairly philosophical about the risks. "I make dance shoes. They cannot forbid making shoes. I put the shoes' photos on my Instagram, and it has a specific audience. Most people don't know about it. When some of my friends saw it, they said they did not know that these shoes were for dancing." Nazrin's attitude is a fairly recent development in Tehran's dance scene. When Ada first started attending classes, people were a lot more worried about being arrested. Now she tells me that they have settled into a familiar rhythm with the police. They, that is the government, they still say dance is sinful, so you must not dance unless you pay bribes and then you can dance, but only in secret, because it's sinful. Dancers still have to keep their lessons secret from their families. Teachers continue counting out the beat in silent rooms, and shoemakers remain few and far between. But opportunities to dance in public are increasing. Although it remains illegal for women to dance in front of men, the only attendees allowed are other women. Yossi explains that things have changed with the election of President Hassan Rouhani. There are a lot more chances to perform, but they ask a lot of money for it. We have to pay a big amount of money for each performance, so it will cost us 200 million rials, which is a lot of money. As informal compromise has reached after decades of jostling between fundamentalist Islam and the Iranian public's reluctance to characterize dance as sinful, pay up, can dance. When she recently returned from Tehran, Ada reminded me that genuine progress remains painfully slow. This new pay-to-dance scheme seems like a good development for Iranian dancers, but the regime is still benefiting from not having a clear border between what is legal and what is illegal, she says. It makes it harder to challenge them, and the majority of the people live even more limited lives by trying to stay away from danger. Ambiguity and fear are the easiest ways to control people. This is really sad, and this new pay-to-play scheme, you got to be careful with that. And, of course, what happened with Maida Habjuri just last week is another indication that this regime will stop at nothing to put an end to the art, to the great, beautiful art of dancing in Iran. It is a sin. It's against Islamic dress code. It's against the Islamic doctrine. It is something that young dancers have a choice. They can stay and do it secretly and pay a bribe, or they can go abroad and display their talent in other ways. I thought this morning it would just be appropriate, since we're talking about dancing, to feature a selection from the Zarbang Ensemble. I want you to hear this incredible Persian dancing music on the Cross in the Desert. Thank you. Incredible, isn't it? The Zarbang Ensemble, a standing ovation. Did you hear the percussion and the different instruments blending together to create that sound, that unique and special sound for dancing in Iran? It's time in our broadcast today where I want to transition, and I want to introduce to you a song, an incredible, extravagant, beautiful worship song by Hillsong of Australia. I wanted to feature this song this morning because yesterday at church, I was totally shocked. It's the first time I've ever heard this song. The band at church performed it with the visuals on the video screen behind them as they sang and performed the song. It was a beautiful experience, but nothing compared to the actual video put out by Hillsong. It's a song called So Will I. It's about the grandeur and the greatness of God. And when you watch this video and you see the orchestra and the visuals, it is stunning. It brings you to tears. I want to feature this song this morning on The Cross in the Desert, and then I want to come back and talk about it a little bit with you. But just to give you an idea of some of the lyrics in the song, one of the lyrics is, if the stars were made to worship, so will I. If the mountains bow in reverence, so will I. If the oceans roar your greatness, so will I. For if everything exists to lift you high, so will I. If the wind goes where you send it, so will I. If the rocks cry out in silence, so will I. If the sum of all of our praises still falls shy, then we'll sing again 100 billion times. It's a song of great worship in response to the greatness and the grandeur of God. I want you to hear So Will I by Hillsong right now.
God of creation, there at the start, before the beginning of time. With no point of reference, you spoke to the dark and fleshed out the wonder of life. And as you see,
stars were made
The incredible, powerful worship music of Hillsong, a song from their newest release, There Is More, a song entitled So Will I. It's breathtaking. I want to respond to this incredible worship song with a reading from Isaiah chapter 40, verse 25. To whom then will you compare me, that I should be like him, says the Holy One? Lift up your eyes on high and see who created these. He who brings out their host by number, calling them all by name, by the greatness of his might, and because he is strong in power, not one is missing. Why do you say, O Jacob, and speak, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, and my right is disregarded by my God? Have you not known? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He does not faint or grow weary. His understanding is unsearchable. He gives power to the faint, and to him who has no might, he increases strength. Even youths shall faint and be weary, and a young man shall fall exhausted. But they who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. The whole 40th chapter of Isaiah is a wonderful commentary on the great song that you just now heard by Hillsong. And I think about the greatness and the grandeur of our God. And I think about how we're created to reflect that in being created in his image, that we reflect that greatness, that talent, that creativity, like our God. And I think about those dancers meeting secretly underground, those dancers being punished and lashed and in prison. And these are the image bearers of God, reflecting his greatness, his glory, his creativity. And they're being stifled, they're being punished. And I think about the greatness of our God, who created them to dance, who created them to soar like the eagle, and to not be imprisoned, and to not be punished. And when I think about the greatness of God, I want to talk a little bit now about my upcoming book, Broken Yet Beautiful. It's a book that is a voice for suffering women in the church, and also women in Iran, Saudi Arabia, and other Muslim-majority countries. It's a book of hope and encouragement to those who are broken by dictatorships, to those that are broken in the church being discriminated against because of their gender. This is a book to support them and to encourage them that God is on their side. And the Bible speaks very plainly in support of women leadership in the church. I want to take some time to read to you this morning from my book that I'm working on that hopefully and prayerfully will be published late next month. It's called Broken Yet Beautiful, Rising Up from Their Ashes. And I want to share a sample with you right now. Beauty comes from brokenness. A broken ground becomes a garden. Broken seeds become flowers. Broken grain becomes bread. Broken clouds produce rain. A broken cocoon releases a butterfly. There is a profound secret in brokenness. The beauty of brokenness is marvelously illustrated in the transformation of sea glass found washed up on beaches all over the world. My dear friend Teresa, writing in her excellent blog, says, "Linen and silk, enemy letters from my garden," she says, she has beautifully captured how the mundane pieces of sea glass discovered buried deep down in the sandy beaches can become an exquisite treasure from its broken pieces. Some beaches and hidden coves are treasure groves of gorgeous, sparkling glass that has endured years of being washed against the sand and rocks by powerful waves. Things that have been discarded and broken have become treasure. This beautiful glass is so sought after that in many places where it has been abundant in the past, it is now rarely found. Each piece of glass is unique and beautiful. When a beach is covered with treasure, it is like a piece of artwork made by God. Dale Chiluwe is a glass artist who has a work called Persian Ceiling. The colors he used created a masterpiece, like a weaving or a painting of smooth, sparkling glass. While the concept of broken glass found on beaches being transformed into works of art is a poignant example of brokenness to beauty, yet the most profound illustration of this concept is found in the incarnation of Christ. The very King of the universe stepped down from his lofty throne in heaven, discarded his royal robes of righteousness, and instead clothed himself in human flesh. The Lord of the universe became a servant, laying aside all his rights and privileges to become a human being, living amidst a hostile world that he had created for his glory. Jesus, the God-man, became one of us. He came into a broken world to pay the ultimate price with his life, to reconcile desperate humanity from the death and bondage of sin. He allowed himself to be horribly disfigured and broken on a wooden cross in order to restore the beauty to his fallen creation. His death forever removed the ugliness of our sin and guilt. Jesus became broken to reveal the beauty of his love and forgiveness. Then the King rose victorious from the dead, once the gentle lamb, but now the fierce lion of Judah, glorified Christ. The once broken servant was now transformed back into the sovereign King of the universe. But first, he had to experience brokenness before beauty could be restored. Broken Yet Beautiful is the story of women who have suffered oppression for thousands of years, being trampled on by misogynistic cultures, and are now beginning to rise up and respond to their divine calling by the King of the universe. Broken is becoming beautiful once again. Paradise is returning to the Garden of Eden, where the curse of sin began its ravenous grip on the souls of our first parents. Women are rising up, no longer viewing themselves as helpless victims, but as courageous survivors, refusing to no longer be dominated by the dictates of controlling men. A perfect example of rising up from their ashes is a brave woman known as Heather, who answered God's call to be the pastor of a church in spite of the discrimination and persecution she suffered when her intentions were revealed. In a blog she wrote, which was published on Christian Biblical Equality International, a Christian egalitarian organization dedicated to biblical equality, Heather poured out her frustrations from the discrimination she received from so-called Christian brothers. Quote, her blog was entitled, "My First Time When Being Who God Made You Isn't Okay." Heather tearfully confessed to the humiliation she experienced when she read an email from two of her colleagues that said, quote, "Heather has no business being in the pulpit." The church is supposed to be a refuge for Christians who, and an atmosphere where the qualities of love, respect, and unity are to rule instead of backbiting and discrimination because of one's gender. Heather explained her journey to becoming a woman pastor in an interdenominational church. Quote, "I knew that God had made me to communicate his truth, to be my authentic self, and to talk to people about the God of the universe who created and loved them. I am uniquely made, and I am a gifted communicator. God made me this way on purpose, and he gave me this desire. I didn't grow up in a church world, but I'm not naive. I knew there might be a pushback to a young woman preaching. I didn't realize it would hurt so much or feel so personal. I felt stripped naked, void of value, and broken." The email comments were personal, hateful, and filled with the pride of a male hierarchy worldview. Quote, "Women shouldn't be allowed to pray if there are men available. This will bring the church nothing but trouble. Women are ruled out as teachers or leaders over men." However, despite the criticism, Heather rose up from the ashes of discrimination and embraced her calling from God. Another example of unbiblical gender discrimination is the sad case of Paige Patterson. Paige Patterson was the president of Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. On May 22, 2018, he was removed from that prestigious position for failing to report to the police the rape of a student in 2003. Instead of urging the victim to immediately leave the situation, Mr. Patterson persuaded her to forgive her perpetrator. During several other private counseling sessions, Paige encouraged abused women to submit to their husbands and instead of instructing them to leave their relationships for physical safety, he persuaded them to pray quietly at their bedsides, confident that God would intervene. Paige Patterson has a warped and unhealthy view of the doctrine of submission and has interjected a false concept of what the Bible actually teaches. He has invested new and unbiblical connotations to the word submission that could have resulted in serious harm to this woman. Again, Paige encouraged abused women to submit to their husbands instead of instructing them to leave their relationships for physical safety. Wow. As we begin our fruitful journey to what the Bible teaches about God's design for women to be effective leaders and pastors in his church, I want to pause for a few moments and invite you to bathe in the healing grace of God's precious promises found in Scripture. The first scripture is Isaiah chapter 46, verse 4. "I have made you, and I will carry you. I will sustain you, and I will rescue you." And then this scripture, Psalm 34, verse 18. "The Lord is close to the brokenhearted. He rescued those whose spirits are crushed. Thus, this is a sample from my new and upcoming book, Broken Yet Beautiful. I'm very excited about the concepts, the encouragement, and the hope it gives women in the church, and also a book that brings us awareness of suffering women in the Middle East and how they are rising up from victimhood to becoming survivors and standing up against the misogynistic governments of Iran. So this book has a lot of detail, a lot of hope for women, and most importantly, biblical support for the vocations they're seeking as pastors and leaders. And so I know this will be a controversial book for many in the church that still have a gender hierarchy mindset, but I believe it will be liberating for most women. I want to take the last few minutes of my program today to talk to you just for a few minutes about my dear friend Dana Zoll Cookson. Dana is a friend of mine who came to my book signings when I worked at Family Christian Bookstore. I met her there and her husband, Thom. And we became good friends on Facebook. A few months ago, maybe more than 6 months ago, she had a prayer request for all of her friends to pray for her. She had been diagnosed with an aggressive form of cancer. And she was taking the treatments and bravely facing this disease with so much faith and confidence that God could heal her. For many months after taking the treatments, she began to see the difference. She believed that she was getting better. The doctors were hopeful. And then she had some very bad news that the cancer had begun to spread to her brain. And so she went to MD Anderson in Texas and began receiving specialized treatments for the way this cancer was spreading. And it was at that point that just a few weeks ago, it was so difficult for her to eat. The pain was so intense, and she had to go to the emergency room and then ended up getting double pneumonia and was hospitalized. And just about a week ago, she passed, and she went home to be with Jesus. This has been a very hard time on all of us who loved Dana, having to say goodbye to her, standing in the gap and praying for her faithfully and believing that God would heal her. But you know, God did heal her. He gave her the ultimate healing, freeing from the hideous pain and the suffering of cancer. He freed her from that and took her home. But this is really tough on her husband, Thom. He has posted several videos with photographs of him and Dana together. It's been a really hard time, so please pray for Thom. I cannot tell you how difficult it is to lose a good friend, but we who are Christians that know Jesus have this hope, have this surety, that once we leave these bodies, we are going home to be with Jesus. And that's where Dana is right now. One day her body will be resurrected and glorified from the grave, and she will be rejoined to that body. And there will be no more suffering, pain, sorrow, death. This is the promise of Scripture. Today on the cross in the desert, I've taken us on a journey behind the scenes to the underground ballerina in Iran. I've also talked to us about the movie Desert Dancer, about Afshin Ghaffarian and his plight to stop the discrimination and to stop the continual rules and regulations. He used weapon as a dance and stood up to this government and made a stand for dancing in the Islamic Republic of Iran. And today also, we've looked at the greatness of God in a song by Hillsong, So Will I. I thank you so much for joining me today on The Cross in the Desert. It is always my pleasure to be with you. While I'm writing my book, I'm only broadcasting once a week. Once that is finished, it will be back to twice a week, Monday and Thursday. But thank you so much for spending time with me today. I hope that this program has been an encouragement to you, especially to pray for the suffering people in Iran who only want to display their God-given talent of dancing. Let's pray for them. And also pray for the family of Miriam Farajid, a beautiful young human rights activist who was murdered by this cruel regime. God bless you. Have a great week, and I will see you next Monday on the Cross in the Desert.
Faithful lightning of his head.